This webcast is a service of South Dakota Public Broadcasting. More information at sd.net.
Good morning. This is Derek Haskins, Communications Director for the South Dakota Department of Health. Thanks for joining us for our COVID-19 update call for this Monday. I'm joined by Secretary of Health Kim Malsom-Risden and Dr. Joshua Clayton, State Epidemiologist. Dr. Clayton will give today's update, and then we will take your questions.
Good morning, everyone. Today we are reporting 37 new cases of COVID-19 in the state. We have, in the past 24 hours, zero new hospitalizations, zero new deaths. We have had 44 individuals who have been newly recovered and are unable to transmit the COVID-19 virus. We've also had 530 new persons test negative for COVID-19. This brings our total of COVID-19 cases in the state to 7,943. Of those, 829 are considered active infections, and 6,996 are considered recovered. We currently have 65 individuals who are hospitalized. We have a total of 118 deaths. And since the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic, we've had 90,711 individuals who have been tested and tested negative for COVID-19. For our community impact map, we have no new updates. As far as our cluster updates, at the Aventura St. Cloud facility, we have currently have 56 residents and staff that are testing positive for COVID-19. The new cases by county include two for Davison, one for Douglas, one for Hutchinson, one for Lawrence, five in Lincoln, one in Miller, 15 in Minnehaha, two in Oglala Lakota, five in Pennington, three in Union, and one in Yankton.
All right, with that, I'll unmute our lines and we'll take your questions. We're now ready for your questions. I'm going to try again, make sure we got everybody unmuted, and then we'll take your questions.
This is Kelly Hertz from the Press and Nakoden.
Go ahead, Kelly.
I was wondering if there's any updates on the respiratory distress syndrome situation, whether that's there's more cases or are we staying pretty much stable with that?
Are you talking about the multi-system inflammatory syndrome in children?
Yes.
Okay. We do currently have that one case that we had reported on our website several weeks ago now. We have identified no additional individuals in the state with that condition, and none have been reported to us. We continue to ask the clinical community to submit reports to the Department of Health if they have a child that meets those clinical criteria so that we can report that to CDC and report that information on our website as an outcome of COVID-19.
Next question.
Yeah, JP at KORN News Radio.
Go ahead, JP.
Thank you very much. Could you give us an update on the testing that's going on at the congregate living sites as of today?
Thank you, JP. This is Kim Malsom-Risden. As of 7:20, so as of right now, we've got 14 providers in 38 different locations who have scheduled testing. That it will include 909 staff and 642 residents of different congregate living facilities across the state. We've received some results already. We've tested 212 staff and found zero positives, and we've tested 171 residents and found four positives. So that's a positivity rate altogether of just over 1%. In addition to the ongoing testing that we'll be doing with this group of providers, we are also going to be working specifically with the EMS community, specifically West River, here starting next week to do some mass testing amongst that group. We will then do some follow-up testing in August that will include EMS, law enforcement, and firefighters. We'll start with West River and then move towards East River with that particular group of individuals.
Thank you.
Next question.
This is Jody at Dakota Radio Group and Peer.
Go ahead, Jody.
I missed the first little bit here, so I apologize if this is a repeat, but I'm noticing a pretty good increase in numbers in Buffalo County. Is that attributed to a particular event, a particular employer, a particular location? What information do you have about that?
So at this time, we don't have any, specific public notices or other clusters that we've identified within the county. I think it does in part represent some additional testing, mass testing that is being taken up by the local tribe. So, no specific updates other than there have been some additional tests from that area as well.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. This is Alex Portal with the Black Hills Pioneer.
Go ahead.
Thank you. But you had mentioned that recovered cases are designated as no longer able to transmit the virus. Can you talk a little bit about what are we learning from these recovered cases? What do we know about the virus, if anything? What can we be? How do we use that in the fight against it?
So I think there is a lot of information that is being collected around those individuals who have recovered from COVID-19. Number one, there's various seroprevalence surveys that have been conducted by the CDC in conjunction with state and local public health agencies to help identify in general, how many people are actually actively or had actively been exposed to COVID-19 and were able to amount an immune response, so the detection of antibodies. There's also a focus on identifying those individuals who have recovered to collect the antibodies so that that can be used as one of the potential treatment modalities out there for COVID-19. There's just ongoing studies to identify how long the antibody may persist in an individual who had previously been infected with COVID-19, and that's an area that I think there's seems to be every other week that we hear a little more about that in terms of different studies that are updating our knowledge. There have been a number of ways that we have been able to, and by we, I mean the larger public health and medical communities, have been able to work with individuals who have recovered from COVID-19 to identify ways to and potential interventions for COVID-19.
Next question.
Todd Eppley, Kelo.com News.
I heard Todd, and then we'll go to Keloland.
Thanks. This is kind of a two-part question. One is, are we seeing any additional cases coming from the meat packers, food processing plants in South Dakota? And then the second part is, what is the Department of Health doing to continue to monitor those companies?
We continue to work with all of the meat production facilities as well as other large manufacturing facilities within the state. That's part of ongoing support that our business team does provide. We continue to monitor cases within businesses, and while those specific businesses that had been identified as clusters are no longer part of the main media updates that we provide on a regular basis, we are looking at those cases at least weekly to identify any increases that would give us pause and allow us opportunities to re-engage with those businesses. At this time, we have, obviously we continue to see, cases, and what I would say is That would be regardless of whether a business has been identified as a one of those businesses with a cluster or not. We continue to see cases among employees of businesses of all kinds and all sizes. And, you know, we are conscious that, you know, we are providing information to those businesses. They're monitoring the CDC website for the most current information to minimize any potential risk. The CDC does have a lot of good information out there now, specifically around those meat production facilities and other potential businesses that might be considered higher risk, such as those that you know, have the meet the critical infrastructure criterion and you know, would continue on even if they did have a case of COVID-19 within their staff. And there, that information continues to evolve, and that guidance is out there, and we continue to work with those businesses.
Josh, does that mean we're seeing cases at the Packers or not?
As I said, as part of my response, we are seeing cases in all businesses, and that does include those that have been previously identified with clusters, yes.
Okay.
We'll go to Kelloland now.
This is Whitney with Kelloland News, and I was wondering, how long are people expected to wait for their test results, and how do delayed test results impact contact tracing?
Whitney, thank you for that question. This is Kim Alsum-Risden. So the length of time it takes to get a test result back really depends on the lab that is doing the actual testing. We have seen a change here in the last week or week and a half, in particular related to out-of-state commercial labs that have quite a bit of capacity to do testing, but their, you know, the volume of testing that they've been asked to do is just outweighed and kind of outstripped their capacity. And so we've seen lab results that are going out of state take up to a week and maybe even longer to get the results. We've obviously that looks different depending on labs here in our state. The state public health lab has been able to continue to put lab results out 24 hours after getting specimens in. Obviously, if there's a delay in getting a test result reported to us, you know, obviously when we see positive test results, we want to investigate those as soon as possible. So delays on testing results does delay our ability to do contact tracing and case identification. And so it's certainly something that we are keeping an eye on and continually working to try to increase testing capacity that we see better turnaround time.
Next question.
This is
Jack Cottle with KUVN and KOTA. Walmart started their mask mandate today, and more retailers are joining in on that. Do you see those as having any impact on slowing the spread in general?
Well, again, Jack, the guidance from the CDC is that people that are likely to come into close contact with other individuals are at, you know, recommended to wear a mask. And so to the degree there's any evidence that that will help slow the spread of COVID, I think that's the light that the CDC would make that recommendation around. So we're hopeful that that's the case.
Next question.
This is Lisa with the Argus Leader.
Go ahead, Lisa.
Going back to the delay in test results, does that mean that there's an undercount of positive tests at this point that people, you know, could be positive, but we just don't know at this point because their test result is delayed?
So there is not a specific underrepresentation or underreporting of individuals who are positive because that result has not yet been identified as positive. What it does mean is that individuals who are having those symptoms and are you know, isolating at home as they should be, it means that they're in isolation for that duration until their test results are coming back, and that during that time, we would not expect that individuals would continue to have additional exposures among coworkers, family members, and so on if their are able to isolate properly within their home. The obvious focus is that yes, those individuals have a longer time from when they had the specimen collected to the time when they will know that result. But the focus here is that they don't have additional transmission events to other individuals while they're waiting for those results.
Next question.
Yeah,
someone started to ask a question, and then we lost you.
Can you hear me? This is
go ahead.
Sorry. Can you talk about what the mass testing plan for the Sturgis Rally will look like and where some of the testing machines and mobile labs will be going in our area for that?
Is this Morgan?
Yep.
Morgan, okay. Morgan, we can follow up with you specifically on where we'll be deploying additional Abbott ID machines to help support greater activity due to the rally. The city of Sturgis plans to do some mass testing of residents of the city after the rally, and so I'd encourage you to contact them for more details around that. Tell me again the rest of your question.
Just what the plan would be and where some of the machines would go and okay. Some of the mobile labs where they'd be going.
Sure. So again, the Abbott ID machines that we've been able to purchase at the state level will be deployed in various locations around West River, including Rapid City, Sturgis, and several other communities. So we can follow up and get you the exact list.
Okay, thanks.
We have time for one final question.
JP from KOR News Radio again.
Go ahead, JP.
Thank you very much. When you're reporting deaths, are these deaths are a direct result of the COVID-19 virus itself? Or, for example, if someone is infected with the virus and let's say they suffered a stroke or a heart attack, would that still be considered a COVID-related death?
So that's actually a very good question, really around the pathophysiology of how COVID might impact a person and, you know, whether that would simply have impact, you know, around their ability to not have symptoms and, you know, not have pneumonia and so on. So the kind of the respiratory side of things versus the other more systemic impact that COVID-19 may have on a person's body. And so there is a lot of good information out there to say that there it's not just the respiratory tract that is impacted with the COVID-19 virus, but that a much larger of the ill effects of the disease are experienced internally and may not be fully, that extent not fully known. There have been some examples of individuals in their 30s and 40s who developed stroke at the national level that is related to their infection with COVID-19, as well as the larger focus on the cardiovascular system. So what I would say is that if an individual it dies from COVID-19 and the clinician has the information in front of them that they were COVID-19 positive and believes that the impact of that COVID-19 virus may have contributed to their death, that would be listed as a COVID-19 death.
All right.
Thank you
all for joining us today, and we will talk to you again on Thursday.